30 million people right now are in a position where they aren't going to have a house. They can't feed their family. They have no job. That's all that stops them from taking those measures into their own hands. Good afternoon, everyone. You're watching today's news that you need to know. It is after 4 p.m. on Monday, August 31st. I'm your host, Full Spectrum Survival. Today, we're going to be covering millions that are about to go hungry in the United States and a coming war that will change everything. Humans are leaving large cities in droves in an action that will lead to empty, chaos-ridden metropolitan areas across the entire United States. Humans are said to have an innate ability to sense trouble, what is coming, and begin preparing for what might happen. This ability is often only witnessed after the event, where it is attributed to an ant-like mindset, in which ants will set off looking for safer nest areas for their colony when they're in danger. Now reports show that humans across the United States are leaving major city areas in large numbers, each one of them scrambling to get away before the collapse falls with its full force, as the economy in these regions are unsustainable during a large-scale financial crisis. Since this crisis started in early 2020, the suburbs around New York City, from New Jersey to Westchester County, all the way to Connecticut and Long Island, are reported to have been experiencing enormous demands for homes of all prices. Everyone's leaving. Officials in those regions say that this is a surge unlike anything in their memory. According to officials, real estate agents, and residents, what is happening right now has never been seen before. In the month of July alone, there was a 44% increase in home sales for the suburban counties and areas that surround major cities. This is when compared with previous years. This statistic is according to Miller Samuel Real Estate Appraisers and Consultants. The increase was 112% in Westchester, just north of New York City, and 73% in Fairfield County, Connecticut, just over the state border. At the same time, the number of properties sold in Manhattan dropped 56%. It is an exodus, a leaving, that is reminiscent of the one that fueled suburbanization of America in the second half of the 20th century. When asked why people are leaving, residents in these large areas like New York City claim that they need a yard to be able to grow their own vegetables. They need an area that is outside of their home so that they can step outside and breathe comfortably. They need the security of knowing that there are not millions, and here's where it's important, millions of strangers around them during a time when predators are using opportunity and surprise to gain advantage against their prey. The world is in free fall. We are moving into an age of darkness, one of chaos, an age when opportunity is the only advantage that people seek. 1 in 10 will be touched by extreme hunger, and 40% with poverty. This data shows that the world is hurtling toward a disaster. As many as 132 million more people than previously expected or projected are to go hungry this year alone, making 2020's gain in humans experiencing food shortages and hunger more than triple the increase any time this century. Crippled economies, eroding consumer purchasing power, and the crisis that we're facing are said to be compounding with natural disasters and supply chain disruptions. This is leading officials to warn that people will suffer an immense toll by the year 2022, and this economic and social crisis will continue to unfold. This is why people are moving out of the city. This is why firearms and ammunition sales are higher than they ever have been before. And under the surface, this is why humanity is at one of its all-time lows. The stress of what is happening right now and the chaos that is coming here in the near future is leading millions of people to their breaking point. In fact, Kelly and I know old friends and acquaintances that have just not been able to handle their personal crisis events when combined with global economic disasters. These crisis events have driven them to substance abuse, and it's terrible. What is about to take place should scare you. It should jumpstart your need to prepare. your need to get a garden going, your need to have chickens or quail or even rabbits in an apartment, your need to rent share or band together with friends to make ends meet before it's too late to find help. According to the reports, what makes the situation even worse is that new levels of food insecurity forecasts for countries that used to have relative stability, like in New York, in Queens, the lines that are snaking around a food bank are reported to be 8 hours long. People there are waiting for a box of supplies that they hope is going to last them a week. Bananas and tomatoes are piling up and rotting in open-air markets. Why? Because even at prices that make farmers go poor, people aren't able to afford them. Wage cuts and unemployment makes them not able to feed their families. In other hard-hit areas of the world, cities are on the brink of famine. We'll see the scars of this crisis for generations. That warning comes from Mariana Chilton, director of the Center for Hunger-Free Communities at Drexel University. In 2120, she says, we will still be talking about this crisis. This event will touch your family. If you're lucky enough to have a garden, be able to hunt, to have food stores to make it through, you will still know other people who will go hungry. This crisis is acting as a determining force in who gets to eat. Millions of people have been thrown out of work, and they don't have enough money to feed their families. In a truly dark look at what could happen, Oxfam International estimates by the end of the year, as many as 12,000 people could perish per day from hunger. On top of the economic collapse, broken supply chains, and other events, these created severe problems for food distribution. The sudden shift away from restaurant eating, which in places like the United States used to account for more than half of all dining, has led to farms having no easy way or means to redirect their production to grocery stores or people who need it. Initial United Nations forecasts now show that in a worst case scenario, 10% of the world's population won't have enough to eat this year. The impact will go beyond that, as millions more are likely to experience other forms of food insecurity, malnutrition, or social insecurity. The officials are warning that they see the end coming. They know what is happening, and they are telling you to get ready. The effects, they say, will be long-lasting. Even in a best-case scenario, the UN predicts that hunger will be greater over the next 10 years than forecast before this crisis started. The current crisis is one of the rarest of times with both physical and economic limitations to access food. That's according to the chief economist with the UN's World Food Program. A great time of darkness is here. What we will soon see is war. Anytime that our history and the history of humankind that a country loses power or wealth, it goes to war. No powerful nation has ever moved quietly into the night without fighting for control. Strategists and analysts are warning that all it will take right now is a predetermined or even a black swan event to take place between militaries to ignite the next world war. With Russia and the United States each moving troops nearer to each other's borders, China and the USA each warning the other nuclear weaponized superpower over the South China Sea, and now India and China accusing each other of military provocation on the Himalayan border. The entire world is a tinderbox, just waiting for a spark. And more details are coming out this afternoon about the coming food shortage. Reports that individuals are becoming so desperate that police are seeing a drastic increase in theft, shoplifting, a sign of what is about to happen as individuals unable to feed their families, their children, or themselves take matters into their own hands. This is one of the reasons why your preparations need to remain your own. Talk with others to help them. Of course, that's the right thing to do. But never divulge your preparation, your preparedness measures with strangers or even those close by. You don't know who might become desperate tomorrow. The crisis that we are facing right now has pushed hunger and desperation to levels not seen in decades, and people are relying on food banks more than they ever have been before. Three times every single week in the Bay Area, hundreds of cars line up to receive what they hope will be just a few days' worth of food. maybe even a week, from the thousands of pounds of food that are given away at the Alameda County Food Bank. We've never seen anything like this in 35 years. That warning is from the food bank's director of community engagement, Mike Alpvest. Each one of these distributions is serving well over 1,000 cars. He says it's one of our four locations across the county where folks are receiving much-needed basic food for free. There are people who have lost their jobs. There are people whose businesses went under. There are people who were forced to stay home. They start lining up as early as 7 a.m. in the morning, and they will sit there in their cars for 6 to 8 hours straight, hoping that there's food left when they get there. Hundreds of cars, they say, slowly move their way through the parking lot across from large dealerships, what used to be thriving businesses. People from all walks of life driving Toyotas, BMWs, Mercedes, they are all coming to get food. They are grateful for everything that they can find. One person says, "I really appreciate all the help. When we need it, they're there. Everybody needs it. It's like," and they say, "you know how it is in these times. It's like we all need some help. Things like onions, potatoes, vegetables, fresh fruit, bags and boxes are being loaded up for the cars. Since the start of this crisis," they continue, "our food distribution has increased between 50 and 70%. Really take these numbers to heart. They say while they were distributing 600 pounds of food a week before this crisis, now they're distributing 1 million pounds of food or more. What happens when this food runs out? What happens when the government starts allowing evictions to take place? What happens when unemployment goes away or states move in to make it harder for people to get assistance that they need? I will tell you what happens. The desperate act. You see, if you have a job, car payments, a house payment, and if you have children at home or family that you love, or even if you're just content with your life, you won't do things. You won't risk going to jail. You won't risk getting hurt for no reason. Why? Because you're comfortable. You have content. You are okay at home. You don't want to see your children see you go to jail. You want to be there to keep security at your house. 30 million people right now are in a position where they aren't going to have a house. They can't feed their family. They have no job. That's all that stops them from taking those measures into their own hands and going and getting food or taking someone else's food. No one will let their children or their family go hungry without acting unless they have a contentedness. Unless they have a reason not to go to jail, unless they have a need to get up and go to work the next day so that they can keep paying those bills and putting food on the table. But 30 million people or more can't do that right now. And it is only because of a government stoppage on eviction. It's only because of a government assistance program that gives them food. And it's only because of food banks that they are not going out and taking these things from other people or businesses. Get ready for when that stops. From my family to yours, please stay safe, remain vigilant, and keep watch. This episode of Full Spectrum Survival is brought to you in part by the Final Warning Conference, a part of the Gen 6 and SteveQuayle.com outreach. Pre-order the Final Warning Brace for Impact DVD set by visiting Gen6.com now. This complete set will include all speaker presentations from the 2020 Final Warning broadcast with Steve Quayle, Tom Horn, Gerald Celente, Mike Adams, Greg Hunter, Dave Hodges, and more. Between the fall election, the greatest pandemic in the modern age, a massive loss of freedom, civil unrest, famine, and war, all of these things continue to unravel our country and our world. Visit Gen6.com and order your copy of the conference right now.
We are facing the darkest time in humanity for generations. War, pestilence, and starvation are to name a few of the disasters forging a change for all of humankind. In November of the year 2019, a novel pneumonia outbreak began killing individuals not 20 miles away from the only BSL-4 level laboratory in all of China that is capable of handling and genetically editing viruses in order to better understand the threat that they pose to humanity. Within months, the entire world would be shut down. Hundreds of millions of humans forced to stay inside of their homes as scientists work tirelessly to discover what this novel disease means for humankind. It was in these months that chilling information came to light. A disease that many would recover from started leaving up to 80% of those once infected with debilitating, lingering symptoms. Fatigue, lack of hunger, weeks-long fevers, neurological disorders, and to make things worse, sudden cardiac and organ failure each became synonymous with disease recovery. Immediately after, political powers around our world started pulling their nations inward. Statewide closures met swiftly with borders as a defense mechanism to stop the spread of the disease. It was during this time that humans around the world discovered just how reliant they were on goods and service delivery. Within days, store shelves were emptied of staple goods and medicine. Canned foods and rice became a rationed source of nutrition. Common toiletries, a wishful pass as people reacted to a break in their expectation of availability. For many, the world stood still. After weeks of stress and forced containment, discontent among the populace reached a tipping point, and widespread political protests turned quickly into riots. The police pulled back, unable to answer the call to protect more than critical infrastructure. These forces were met swiftly with crop failures, extreme weather events forcing thousands from their homes in countries around the world, continued civil unrest and war between families, and uncertainty rose quickly in the hearts of all humankind. It is for these times, for this uncertainty, that you must prepare. If you do nothing more to get ready for what is coming, fulfill these 5 tasks and you will increase your chance to survive an event right now. Number 1. Learn how to make water safe to drink. Without it, you will die. The human body is made up of water. The heart and brain alone are over 70% water, with your other organs falling quickly behind. Even huddling deep within the confines of your own home, you are consuming water. When you feel thirsty, it's already too late. You are 5% dehydrated, and at just 15%, the human body shuts down. Learn to make water safe to drink through desalination, which removes salt and other impurities from water sources, through filtration, which passes water through a membrane, allowing only the water and other smaller particles to pass, through boiling, which kills bacteria and viruses through heat, and by way of sanitation, which uses a chemical like bleach to eradicate dangerous pathogens from your water source. Finding water is your first step to survival. Making it safe to consume is next. Number 2. Stock no less than 3 months' worth of staple food supplies and medicine. The COVID crisis showed the world that without constant transportation, there will be no canned goods on the shelf for you to purchase. Plan ahead now by purchasing staple dried goods like rice, flour, and sugar. These can be preserved over the course of a year by placing these dried goods into 5-gallon buckets and using them as necessary. Next, find out how many cans of food you need to supplement the dietary needs of your family. Rice and flour make great calorie-dense foods, but they are sparse in nutrition diversity. Adding canned fruits and vegetables into your food stores ensures that your entire family will have the health that it needs to survive the next event. Number 3. Plan to forage and hunt inside and outside of the city. Being stuck inside of a city does not mean that hunting is out of the question. What it does is it gives hunting a different meaning. Learn what animals are around your workplace, your neighborhoods, your modes of transportation to and from your essential places. Use popular phone applications and physical books to learn the wild edibles that survive all around you so that you and yours may survive through supplementation. If you have an interest in mushroom gathering, There is no better time to learn than right now. Many mushrooms have dangerous and even deadly lookalikes. Positive spore prints that are sent off to local universities and learning from skilled foragers is the only way to ensure that you don't turn dinner into a disaster. Number 4. Learn how to protect yourself and your home. It's now obvious. The police are not coming. They cannot come quickly to your aid in times of widespread chaos. Their main job becomes protecting the continuity of government and infrastructure so that the majority within the populace can remain safe. This excludes the protection of the minority that are suffering catastrophe at any time during the event. Do you have the ability to purchase a firearm so that you may use the same tools to defend yourself as your attacker will use? Can you find and practice with less lethal tools, such as bear mace, hornet spray, police-grade pepper spray, batons, and weapons of urban lethality? Any tool that sits short of a firearm becomes an enhanced skill that takes determination and training if you hope to use it against an oncoming attack. Practice with less harmful alternatives that mimic the weight and the hold of your tools of defense. Use a bat to practice against a dummy. A practice knife against a training companion. A can of WD lubricant against a target, or a stick against a tree. Any one of these training exercises will increase your hand-eye coordination and make you better prepared to handle your own when the attack comes your way. And number 5, make a plan to remain mobile. There is a military saying, "No plan survives first contact with the enemy." That invaluable phrase comes from a 19th century Prussian military commander, where it holds as true today as it did those many years ago. You might have the best bunker in the world, stocked to the brim with gadgets and supplies, but one fight against a trickster or an enemy that has thought through this attack will leave you and your family drowning or gasping for air in what you had hoped to be an impenetrable fortress. No matter what your situation is, able or less able, fit or handicapped, injury, incident, and circumstance can leave you without access to your retreat location. Sit down with your family and talk about what could cause you to leave your home during a crisis. Where will you meet? How will you protect yourself on the road? How will your group members meet up? And will they be able to identify themselves in the dead of night? What about your food storage or your pets? Who among you will carry those burdens during an event? Only by working on these 5 skills and enhancing them to the fullest of your abilities will you be prepared for what is coming. Please comment, like, and share this video. From my family to yours, thank you for being here with us. Our outreach is only made possible by members on patreon.com/fullspectrumsurvival. Consider joining us there, where you will get monthly survival cards in the mail from our family to yours. They're waterproof and for your backpack so that you'll be better prepared for what is coming. Please stay strong and stay safe.
Hey there, folks. Welcome to hour 2 of the Eric Metaxas Show. I hope you didn't miss hour 1. If you did, you must go back. We were talking to Paul Kangor, who has written a book called Karl Marx and the Devil. It is horrifying and vitally important that we understand that Marxism, so when we're talking about BLM, the organization, or Antifa, they're effectively Marxist, and they not only don't believe in God or have any values that you would get from the Bible. For example, racism is wrong. They will use anything to further their power, but they couldn't care less about racism or whatever. They're just going to use whatever they can to amass power. And ironically, what I said on Tucker last night, the point is that they love to infiltrate churches. So the United Methodist Church is going along with this. And a lot of really foolish churches and denominations, but also a lot of good people who have been duped are going along with this, not understanding what is happening. So we posted this on my personal YouTube channel, my Eric Metaxas YouTube channel, and also on the Eric Metaxas Show YouTube channel. Albin, I got to tell you, I find this stuff chilling because it's right out of my Bonhoeffer book on a level that I've never, ever seen, where the Nazis tried to take over the churches and succeeded because of the ignorance of the people leading the churches.
And folks out there, whatever your church, wherever it is, make sure that they don't get sucked into this. Now, this is only like a 3-minute interview. You've got to take this link and you've got to share it with everyone you know who is a Christian. Make sure this does not infiltrate your church. This could be the end of our country as we know it.
I mean, it's hard to say stuff like that, except that's exactly correct. I mean, this in Germany, nobody saw what was coming in 1933 when the Nazis began to do this kind of thing. And the churches went along because they thought, this is a good thing. We believe in this, and we believe in, you know, German lives matter. And we you know, this is good stuff. We believe in this, of course. You know, we believe Black Lives Matter, of course. But you realize that they are, it's almost like a hermeneutical lever that the Marxists are getting in. And once you begin using the Marxist terminology of white privilege or white nationalism, whatever, then you're done, because they've got they have the leverage, and eventually the Christian ideas are going to be pushed out. And I mean, I hate to say this. Listen,
Christians are afraid they're going to be called a name. Ooh, they're going to call me.
I was
going
to say, here's the good news. The good news is we have John Zmirak on to help us make sense of the world. John, welcome.
Thanks, Eric. And let me second your recommendation. The Devil and Karl Marx by Paul Kengor is one of the most important books anyone could read this year. And I have to say, with the churches being taken over and infiltrated by Marxist functionaries under the label of anti-racism, they have no excuse. Just as the churches in the 1930s in Germany really had no excuse, if they looked at Mein Kampf, they could see this means the extermination of tens of millions of people. The evidence was there. They chose not to look at it. The organization Black Lives Matter is led by people who say they are trained Marxist revolutionaries. That's up on their website.
They say that. Let's be clear. They say that. So if you get involved with them, what I said on Tucker was that you're riding on the back of a tiger. The tiger will eat you. This is not fun. You don't seem to understand what you've gotten involved in. And I think that there are many people who've naively gotten involved and they say, oh, I'm against racism. Well, let me tell you something. Marxists are not against racism. Marxists would kill George Floyd if it helped them get power. They do not believe that George Floyd or you or me or anyone is made in the image of God and therefore sacred. They don't believe that, but they will use these issues just as the Nazis did. And it's horrifying to compare anything to the Nazis, but these folks are out and out Marxists. We're not comparing, you know, people we don't like, leftists. We're talking about people now who are openly Marxist, using Marxist tactics in the streets and so on and so forth. So it needs to be said that some churches have gotten sucked in.
Karl Marx himself was a horrible racist. This guy was a racist, and he wrote...
He used the N-word liberally. He would refer to people as kikes. Karl Marx, what Kengor shows in his book, is Karl Marx was a nasty, twisted, dark human being who found the oppression of the working class as a cause he could glom onto to try to get zealots behind him in his desire to rebel against God and destroy the world as it was. And his early writing, you see him over and over again sympathizing with Satan, sympathizing with Prometheus, a sort of a Lucifer figure in Greek mythology, wanting to tear down and destroy everything, and only having the most fantastical fairy tale storybook idea of what he would build instead. And we see that in American cities with Antifa smashing neighborhoods, trying to burn down courthouses, attacking loser liberal mayors like Wheeler, the mayor of Portland. He's besieged in his apartment building by his own supporters. I have a piece at stream.org that I think people would enjoy that kind of brings home the contrast, the choice we're facing in November. There are two young men in America, both from the Midwest, who represent very different futures for America. I don't know if you people have heard of this. His name is Matthew Banta. He's age 23. He was arrested in Neenah, Wisconsin, for having a knapsack full of makeshift grenades and carrying a flamethrower. He was planning to burn down buildings. He was part of Antifa. The police grabbed him. He threw himself on the ground, curled up in a ball like a fetus, and started sobbing hysterically. And when the police touched him, he started yelling, "You're crushing me, I can't breathe." He really felt like a victim because the police were trying to take away his flamethrower.
Yeah.
This is Joe Biden's America. This is the kind of American that Joe Biden and his policies will produce, that have been produced on campuses. When they say, and I can trace this directly. You know the expression snowflake and microaggression? If you tell kids in school, when you hear an idea that offends you, that makes you feel unsafe. That's a microaggression against you. You have the right to punch the person who does that to you, because that makes them a Nazi, and you can punch a Nazi. And so you're telling them that they can be spoiled, hysterical brats playing with flamethrowers and grenades, threatening police, destroying people's lifelong businesses, destroying their neighborhoods because they feel an aggression has come upon them. That is the America that the Democrats are offering us this November. By contrast, Kyle Rittenhouse, heroic young man, also from nearby, just over the state line in Illinois. He went to Wisconsin. Kenosha?
Kenosha.
He went to Kenosha because he had seen on TV store owners having their life savings destroyed. He saw an old man with a fire extinguisher trying to save his building getting beaten up by young thugs from Antifa. He showed up there. He's a trained EMT. He was giving first aid to protesters who'd been injured. He was actually running around with a fire extinguisher putting out dumpster fires that Antifa had set. And that's why they attacked him. They went after him for putting out their fires. He ran away from them, but he had a gun. Thank God he had a gun as an American. He's running away from the arsonists who are angry he put out their fire. He trips and falls. One of them comes at him with a gun and fires. Another tries to club him with a skateboard. He shoots in self-defense, shoots accurately because he'd been training. He'd been doing safety lessons. He shoots accurately, kills two of his assailants and wounds another. And the Democrats want to send him to prison for the rest of his life for first-degree murder.
He's 17 years old.
So these are the two Americans.
An Eagle Scout and an EMT.
Right.
Okay, we're going to go to a break. Folks, I'm talking to John Zmirak. I don't expect you to be going any place. We're going to be right here. Stick around. Hey there, folks. I'm talking with our friend John Zmirak. John, before we continue the conversation about Kyle Rittenhouse, I want to say that tonight I posted this to my sent out an e-blast to everybody on my email list. I also put it on Twitter and on Facebook. I'm giving a talk. I guess it's 5 p.m. Central tonight, so 6 p.m. Eastern, about my book, If You Can Keep It. It's going to be live, available to everyone, but you have to register. So if you want to, in a funny way, it's a follow-up to what I said on Tucker Carlson last night. In other words, the link between virtue or faith and ordered liberty, which is what we have in America, and how there's another version, which is when you have no virtue and no faith, which is effectively the Marxist version. There are various versions of that version. But I'll be talking about that tonight. You can look for my email, or you can see it on Twitter or on Facebook. I hope you get it. So, John, you were just running down the details of this Kyle Rittenhouse situation. He's 17 years old. He killed two people and wounded another.
Who were attacking him?
Yeah,
there's video. We have this on video. He was on the ground because he tripped because they were chasing him, looking to beat him to death. One of them had a gun and fired at him, and later said he wished he'd emptied the whole clip in him and killed Kyle.
Wait a minute. He was shot at?
Yes.
That I had not heard.
Yeah, the guy fired a gun. He just was incompetent, so it didn't go anywhere near Rittenhouse. So if someone's coming at you with a gun and fires, but they're incompetent and they don't hit you, that doesn't make it not self-defense. Kyle Rittenhouse, we can see him. He's on the ground with his AR-15, having run away from these people. One of them is swinging a skateboard at him. Another is wielding a gun he's already fired. Kyle shoots, shoots all three of them, saves his own life, and now the whole system wants him to put him away. I mean, it's that bad. Twitter took down the account of Lynn Wood, his attorney. Get that. Lynn Wood, who took on leading his defense, he's Nick Sandman's lawyer, Twitter disabled Lynn Wood's account for talking about Kyle Rittenhouse. Apparently, Twitter doesn't believe in the presumption of innocence or the right of a defendant to have a trial or a defense attorney. That's how bad it is. It is literally becoming like the Eastern Bloc, where they just grab a dissident off the street and put him in a psychiatric hospital.
In some of these states, obviously in places like Wisconsin.
I want to encourage people to go to Fight Back Foundation. The Fight Back Foundation is raising money for Kyle Rittenhouse's legal defense. I gave them $500 yesterday. If every one of your listeners followed suit, we could make sure this young man gets the justice he deserves and walks free.
What is the website?
Fight Back Foundation. It's Linwood's foundation for helping people like him and like Kyle Rittenhouse, like Nick Sandman, like all the people who are getting targeted for destruction by the leftist machine.
I have to say this as a Christian, right? We cannot rejoice in the deaths of the young men that he killed. We weep, and it is a tragedy, but when you do not have law enforcement doing their job, when you allow this kind of madness to spill into the streets where people are deliberately menacing, threatening, cursing, lighting things on fire, doing other things, it is the job of the government. We know this is a biblical thing, okay, to wield the sword so that the innocents are protected. It seems to me that those two deaths are indeed tragic. I wish that had never happened. But I think to myself, if the government is not doing its job, as they did not do in Kenosha, as they've not been doing in Portland and so many other cities, this is what happens. And that ultimately to me is the issue, is that how is it that some mayors and some governors have decided that they can just pull back? I mean, that is frightening. That is really
Eric, the opposite of justice. If the government says we're not going to protect store owners, we're just going to let people loot, I think it's the right and duty of people to do what Kyle Rittenhouse did. And I think of it during Kristallnacht, when the Nazis were letting people vandalize, destroy, smash synagogues, smash Jewish shops. Would it have been wrong for people to defend those shops? I don't think so. I think it would have been right. And I think it was right for Kyle Rittenhouse, and it's right for store owners, and it's right for citizens to form militias to protect their neighborhoods if they're not going to be protected by the police. When a left-wing Democrat mayor says, we are not letting the police protect this neighborhood, they're effectively resigning as the government. Yeah. They're saying Black Lives Matter and Antifa are now the government. They now have a monopoly of violence, and we're going to let them rule you. And that is what the left-wing death squads did in Central America. That's what they do in Cuba. That's what they do in Venezuela. We as Americans cannot surrender the streets to these people.
You know, it's a funny thing. I think of the two young men that are killed, right? I think to myself, it is the government that did them a disservice. When you it's kind of like allowing people to drive 160 miles an hour. Like if you let that happen, people are going to kill themselves and other people. So it's the job of the government to enforce the laws. When they don't do that, I don't see how it is not they who are to blame for the number of deaths and tragedies and for the loss of businesses and capital. I mean, it's unbelievable. I don't know how this is all going to play out. I do hope that people understand it's your duty to pray, folks. Pray for this country. Pray for this country every day, because we've not seen anything like this. It's absolutely horrifying that we even have to be having these conversations.
The last time we saw something like this was in the 1920s, when Democrat mayors in the South would let the Ku Klux Klan burn down Black neighborhoods because people resented the Blacks. And they would just pull back the police and let the mob run wild. The last time the Democrats did this, the Ku Klux Klan was their street militia. This time Democrats are doing this with Antifa and Black Lives Matter as their street militia. And you know, in both cases, back then in the 20s, some black store owners and homeowners defended themselves with their guns, but the government had tried to disarm them. It had specifically racist gun control laws. The first gun control laws in the South were passed to stop black people from having weapons so that the Klan could terrorize them. And now if you look at Australia, what's going on in Australia, a pregnant woman was arrested by the police and pulled out of her home, and all her computers were seized because she was trying to organize an anti-lockdown demonstration. We have video of her being dragged out of her house, this pregnant woman, and all her computers, everything ripped out by the police because she was on Facebook trying to organize a peaceful demonstration against the lockdown. Do you know what happened in Australia, why it's not free anymore? They let the government take all their guns about 10 years ago. A disarmed population is not a free population. That's why our founders, as you noted in If You Can Keep It, our founders intended the Second Amendment as the ultimate backstop against government tyranny. And what is being inflicted on people in Seattle and Portland is government tyranny. Black Lives Matter and Antifa are the armed militia of the left wing of the Democratic Party. And they are, try to wear a Trump hat in downtown Seattle and Portland. You'll get beaten up. That's not a free country. That's tyranny. We are being subjected to tyranny now.
John, it sounds like we've gone through the looking glass or we've gone nuts, because when I was writing my book on Bonhoeffer, and you know, I'm writing about mobs of brown shirts on the streets in Berlin, I remember thinking that can't happen in America. I don't know what was happening then, but that can't happen in America. And here we are 10 years after I wrote the book, and that is what is happening in America. And I think that it is a lesson to us, right? Anytime anybody thinks like, well, we're better than those Germans. Mm-hmm. Well, no, we're not better. We're
less educated. Germany in the 30s had a higher level of education and literacy in every way than we have right now. It was the most literate society in the history of the world. But it was a society where the government had disarmed the people. The Weimar Republic took the guns away from all law-abiding people. So the only people who had them were the terrorists, the communists and the Nazis. It's only in blue states, in blue cities. Excuse me. You're not seeing Antifa marching in Dallas. Black Lives Matter is not taking over Atlanta. Why? Because the Second Amendment still applies in those jurisdictions. And go figure, there's no tyranny.
We're going to go to another break. Folks, let me remind you, if you go to MyPillow.com, don't forget to use the code Eric, very important, MyPillow.com. Use the code Eric. We'll be right back with John Zmirak. Folks, welcome back. I'm talking to John Zmirak. John, you want to talk about Jacob Blake's victim. Explain who Jacob Blake is.
Jacob Blake is the man who was shot in Kenosha when he was fighting with the cops and wielding a knife.
That's what started the madness.
That's what started the madness.
Okay. Jacob Blake... I guess I saw on social media this morning that he was openly anti-Semitic.
That's his father. That's his father.
That's his father.
His father, who was going to meet with Joe Biden to commiserate about his poor widow son, Jacob Blake, who said he wouldn't meet the father, who said he wouldn't meet with Trump because I have already talked to President Biden. That same guy has all sorts of anti-Semitic nutjob conspiracy theories all over Facebook. And now the Biden campaign has to decide, do we already have the Jewish vote in the bag so we can still meet with the Jew-baiting psycho, or do we need the Jew-baiting psycho vote more than we need the Jewish vote? And the whole Biden campaign is about putting together little splinter groups that they think don't care about the country as a whole, but care only about the little private interests. But in my piece at stream.org, I said, in Kenosha, Trump should have met with the victim, Jacob Blake's victim. All this whining about Jacob Blake, the guy who tried to fight off the cops and had a large knife and was resisting arrest. Why was he being arrested? Why are we erasing the victim of the crime? They didn't just grab Jacob Blake off the street for walking while black. A black woman had called 911 on Jacob Blake. Why? Because he was her ex-boyfriend. He barged into her house, violating a restraining order. Why did he have that restraining order? Because back in May, he had barged into her house. There's no delicate way to put this.
You don't have to. Let me try. He digitally raped her. And it's worse than that. We don't need to go into the details, but it's disgusting. It is rape, sexual violence toward the woman. And that is why she called the cops.
She called the cops when he came back because he was trying to steal her car. Okay. Do you want black women to be subjected to this? If you say the police should not have arrested Jacob Blake, or when he resisted, they should have just let him go. You are saying black women in all these neighborhoods should be terrorized by their psychotic ex-boyfriends, that the women and children and old people and bookish young people, all the non-thugs in those neighborhoods who are the huge majority, that the vast majority of residents of poor neighborhoods in America, black and white, should be bullied and sexually violated and terrorized and robbed by the thugs in that neighborhood. And that is exactly what happened in Seattle when they created that Chaz enclave. It became like a theft and rape camp. There were multiple rapes and assaults that could not be resolved because the police couldn't get in there because Black Lives Matter thugs were running the neighborhood like it was some terrorist camp in Rwanda or some camp, ISIS camp in Syria. Do you want the thugs to terrorize the poor people of America? That's the question. If you're saying that criminals can resist arrest, if you say that, police will just stand down. They will just stop enforcing the law. They will not show up. If they can't use force to subdue someone wielding a knife who is accused of sexual assault, they're just going to stay home in their own safe neighborhoods. And who's going to suffer? Black people. Brown people, poor people are going to be the victims, as we've seen in all these Democrat cities.
This is why, John, this is why I have said and will continue to say, if you really care about the urban poor in America, if you care about minorities in the cities in America, you must vote for Donald Trump. If you really care about them, if you just want to pretend to care about them, then you're going to vote for Biden. But if you actually care about them at this point, the choice is very, very clear. Yes. I was hoping we could segue to something more cheerful, like Nancy Pelosi's hair colorist.
Oh, yeah. Nancy Pelosi is now blaming.
She put out a statement, the buck stops with my colorist.
Yeah, she is blaming the victim. Here's this woman whose salon has been bankrupted because of the insane lockdown in California. Remember, California, which dumped COVID patients on nursing homes, killing tens of thousands, but they're closing hair. They've closed hair salons. This woman's hair salon is closing because she can't run her business. Nancy Pelosi rents the place out to get herself a spa experience in violation of all the COVID regulations. The woman complains about it. Nancy Pelosi says, "I was set up. It's her fault.
Well, actually,
I blame her."
What's even odder is that Nancy Pelosi shows up. She's just walking around without a mask, and the people in the salon have masks. So it is interesting that the double standard. People are seeing the double standard. In a couple of minutes, by the way, I'm talking to Pete Peterson of Pepperdine, picked a peck of pickled peppers. Pete Peterson of Pepperdine, and we're going to be talking about what's going on in California. That's in the next segment. But, John, also we have to mention that Governor Cuomo threatened the president of the United States that if he comes to New York, he better have an army.
Well, then I think he needs to go there with the army. I think Donald Trump needs to ride down Fifth Avenue on a tank and show him U.S. government still has sovereignty, even in the smoking rubble of what was once New York City, is still American territory. I'm sorry, Jefferson Davis, governor of New York, you have not seceded from the Union. There are millions of New Yorkers who don't want you bullying them, who don't want you driving them out of the state. As you once said, pro-lifers, evangelical Christians, gun people who love gun rights have no place in New York. If these people take over the country, we'll have no place in America.
Can you even imagine, though, that a governor would say something like that. Listen, we're out of time. I wanted to end on a happy note. I failed. John Zmirak, we love you. Thank you for your commentary. Folks, we're going to talk to Pete Peterson of Pepperdine in just a moment. Alvin just handed me a list of people. Some of your names are on this. You have not yet gone to MyPillow.com and used the code Eric. I don't want to read these names on the air, but you know, the discount when you use Eric is so good, it's kind of crazy not to go there. He's selling face masks and hand sanitizer and obviously like the greatest sheets in the world, Giza sheets, whatever the heck that means. I don't know. All I know is it's great stuff. So I'm going to read some of these names. Brittany, Caitlin, Nick, Angelo. You want me to read your name? I'm going to keep going. Meadowlark Lemon. Meadowlark Lemon passed away, Alvin. This is an old list. Anyway, if you haven't gone to MyPillow.com and used my code Eric, you don't know what you're missing.